Calling all lovers of mystery. Prepare to don your detective hat in June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective who is on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. Take a trip in time to the glitzy 20s to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. If, like me, you get sad when a story comes to a close, never fear. With June's Journey, the thrill is endless, since new chapters are added weekly. And not only can you enjoy the detective adventure, but you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island, where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
This podcast is being brought to you by Voyage AC,
the official fragrance of the White House.
I still can't believe it. Melanie must be pinching herself, huh?
I think we're all in shock. Imagine dignitaries from all over the world who visit the White House are going to leave with a gorgeous handmade Voyage AC candle.
Wow. But the best thing is you don't have to visit the White House or be a dignitary to get your own candle.
No, you don't. Voyage AC is your destination for candles and a plethora of other wonderful gifts like beachwear, diffusers, glamorous masks, face and body products. So how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VOYAGEETCIE.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount to all of our listeners right now. That's 10% off everything you buy.
Yep. All you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
This episode is being sponsored by Cute Booty Lounge.
You mean this cute booty is being sponsored by Cute Booty Lounge?
Honey, you look so good in those camo leggings.
Oh, thank you, honey. I got two pair because I love them so much. Cute Booty Lounge is made right here in the USA by women and for women. The company is incredible, female and minority owned.
And did you say that they fit every shape and size?
Yes, they do. And they also have these super cute patented scrunch butt pockets. Mm-hmm. But it's the thing is, they give you this snatch waist and this cute booty and they elongate your legs. Plus, if you're like me and you're in loungewear 90% of the time, these are the leggings for you. There's a cute booty style for everyone. No matter where your active life takes you, Cute Booty Lounge or CBL will comfortably dress you from head to toe. Whether you're running errands, headed to the gym, or having a night out, Cute Booty Lounge has you covered. Embrace your body. Love your booty.
And to make it even sweeter, head to cutebootylounge.com and enter the code THEONLYBOOTY to get 15% off your first order.
What? I think you need to say that again.
Head to cutebootylounge.com and enter the code THEONLYBOOTY to get 15% off of your first order.
I am Robert Chelsea. I'm the only African-American in the room to receive a full face transplant. I think the first 8 months, I had not seen my face. I saw the towel holder, and it showed a reflection of my face. I said to myself, oh, my God, that's what everybody is concerned about. You know, people would say, oh, my God, I'm so sorry for you. You didn't deserve this. You know, I'm thinking, as far as I'm concerned, I'm just fine. But they were seeing the outward appearance, finally realized this is what they're making the issue of. But it was okay with me.
Imagine a drunk driver slams into your car at such a high rate of speed that it explodes before you can get out. Robert Chelsea, 70-year-old father and salesman, was pulled from the wreckage of a burning car in August of 2013, but not before over 75% of his body was burned, leaving his hands, arms, and face unrecognizable. But what would you do if no one had ever successfully completed a full face transplant on someone your age or your race? Would you decide that the surgery wasn't worth the risk? Or would you volunteer to become the first African American and oldest American ever to receive a full face transplant? Hi, I'm Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. In September 2018, I found myself in an all too familiar position. Looking around the room at the other attendees at a famed writer's retreat, I realized that I was the only Black woman in the room. When I wrote about my experience for the Huffington Post, something surprising happened. 24 hours after my piece went live, I had 568 direct messages in my inbox. These were messages from people of all races, ethnicities, creeds, and nationalities who had connected with my piece because they too had felt othered. These are the stories we want to share. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say that this podcast is for everyone. You're listening to The Only One in the Room, presented by Lipstick and Vinyl and executively produced by Christina Barcy. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show. And if you have an Only One in the Room story you'd like to share, you can DM us on Instagram at The Only One in the Room. Enjoy the show.
Honey, it's season 9.
Season 9, well, April 2021.
We're still alive. We're coming up on our second year.
I can't believe it.
I know. That's fantastic. Thank you guys for all your support.
Yeah. And, you know, for our 9th season, we have so many different types of stories, from sex surrogates to people that are translating cultures, to today's episode, which is Robert Chelsea, who was hit by a drunk driver, and he's the first African-American ever to get a full face transplant.
You guys have to meet Robert. He is an amazing soul.
I love him so much.
I know. He's the best.
So in honor of Distracted Driving Awareness Month, you'll also hear us read a PSA from the NHTSA. What's that, honey?
It's the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and we'll be reading these things throughout the month to remind you guys to keep your eyes on the road.
Yes, and so this whole week is kind of dedicated to distracted driving, but the rest of season 9 has, like I said, a variety of different episodes. Mm-hmm. You're going to come away scratching your head from some of them. Some of them you're going to be really inspired, like we are. All of them you're going to be really curious and probably want to play again.
We want to thank you guys for all your support. You know, we have almost 280 shows on our website at www.theonlyonepod.com. Yep. And we also have merchandise. We have a Facebook group. We have lots of love on our Instagram. We have this crazy video going around where we're wearing wigs.
We got 20,000 followers on Instagram.
We got 20,000 followers. Yeah.
So great. But yeah, so this is our 9th season. This is the premiere episode. This is Distracted Driving Month, Distracted Driving Awareness Month. But we are honoring that with 1 week of shows that relate to that and support the awareness. So
yeah, we want to thank you guys from the bottom of our souls.
Yes, enjoy.
Enjoy the show.
So Robert Chelsea, tell me what song always brings you out onto the dance floor?
That's quite an ice-breaking question.
Is there a song that you love that just gets your body moving?
How Great Thou Art.
How Great Thou Art.
Classic.
Okay, yes, yes. I've seen you working out. Do you work out to that as well?
I don't really work out to songs. I've been so fortunate. I hate to say I have a song in my heart, but it doesn't have melody to it.
Mm.
It's a song of, if you will, a pond that has the most beautiful fish that you don't want to intimidate, touch. You don't want to stir the waters, but just enjoy the pleasantry of God's gift in the waters.
All right. So you have a song in your heart that's like a pond filled with beautiful fish that you don't want to touch or intimidate. You just want to enjoy.
Yes.
I love that. Thank you for that. So I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room, but I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, Hun. So, man, do I have a story for you today. Are you ready, Hun?
I hope so.
Okay. So here we go.
All right.
Robert Chelsea, that's our guest today. Robert was having car trouble on August 5th, 2013. So he pulled onto the shoulder of a highway outside of his home near Long Beach, California. Soon after, a drunk driver slammed into his car and it burst into flames. So Robert is a sales manager for a rubber stamp business. He was rushed to the hospital with third-degree burns covering almost half of his body. After being transferred to the University of California Irvine Medical Center, Robert spent four months, hon, drifting in and out of consciousness as doctors fought to save his life. He had 18 surgeries at that time, mostly skin grafting for his burns, but also abdominal operations to treat serious gastrointestinal complications that it developed as his body struggled to stay alive. Blood pressure medication shunted blood flow to his heart and away from his extremities, leading to tissue death in the lips, nose, and fingers. One of his surgeons, Dr. Victor Joe, called him, quote-unquote, one of the sickest patients we've ever had. Robert says he woke up 6 months later to a new reality, if you can imagine that. Robert left UC Irvine in December 2013 with his life, but by the end of his recovery, he would lose his lips, the end of his nose, several fingertips, two-thirds of his intestines. His face was severely scarred, his hands were covered in cadaver skin that matched Robert's skin tone but never quite mimicked its texture. Robert, you were an organ donor before the accident, is that right?
Yes, I was an organ donor, yes.
And how come you were an organ donor? Because as speaking as a Black woman, I know a lot of us aren't organ donors because we're afraid of a variety of things. What made you be an organ donor?
I had felt for, 40 years or more that the least I could do is give of myself this physical body. One thing that I can't do for someone is save their soul. Mm. That's something they have to do for themselves, ask God to forgive them. However, I can give this physical body as much attention and share it with as many as I could. So I've been an organ donor for at least 30 or 40 years or so.
Right. I mean, that's wonderful and inspirational. And I hope people take note of that and sign up. It's super easy here in California. Anyway, when you get your driver's license, they almost make you check the organ donor box. It's presented to you several times. So it's an easy thing to do. And I hope people do it because you are walking proof of why we need organ donors.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
You said in the BBC documentary that I watched on you that there were several reasons why you decided to get the full face transplant surgery. And one of them was the idea of being able to address a person without intimidating them. And you described that as a relief. Can you tell me about that?
That is one of the reasons, but it's minor compared to so many others.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you should present yourself as best as you can, that is, to another, especially if you are one that wants to exemplify the love of God.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, I think there's a scripture that says, be holy in all manner of conversation. There's another that says, greet all men with a holy kiss. And so you don't want to present yourself in a fashion that might, you know, turn them off or make them afraid, especially the condition, the physical condition that I was in as a burn victim.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid to approach you and afraid to even spend a moment with you. Not that they are necessarily scared, but uncomfortable.
Right.
So I felt that the face transplant, of course, would help in that area, but that really had no main basis for me to become a recipient.
Right.
My initial concern was the function that I would be able to recover, and that is to be able to, I can't swallow very well or spit. The drinking has to be done through certain utensils,
mm-hmm,
and eating and so on. So the function of my cheeks, jaws, and so on was very important, and that required lips. The plastic surgeons that saw me, which was probably more than 7 or 8, they all said that there was not a lot they could do to give me functionality.
Mm-hmm.
They could provide a covering. You know, they could take skin from your body or from another donor and cover my teeth and mouth so that, you know, dust particles and so on could be, at least it would be a less amount,
mm-hmm,
coming in.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to interrupt for a quick second. Because this is audio, I just wanted to kind of paint a picture for our listeners what you look like after the accident, after you were released from the hospital,
uh-huh,
and you had lost the tip of your nose, right, and lost your lips. And I just wanted to actually, listeners, we have Everick Brown on the line, and Everick is Robert's godson, which is, they have such a beautiful relationship. He is sitting here with us because he loves his godfather, but he's also sitting here with us because I needed to throw a couple of questions to him. And Everick, you're in New Jersey, is that right?
New York,
okay. And you're of Brown Design, which is the interior design firm that's led by you and your wife, Lisa, right?
Yes, it's Everick Brown Design.
Everick Brown Design. Yeah, and
Thank you.
My goodness, what a beautiful site. I'm going to put the site in our show notes so people can drool over the work that you do.
Thank you.
Would you be able to just tell me what was your impression of your godfather once he was released from the hospital and he was without his lips and his nose, and then how you felt about him getting the full transplant surgery?
Sure. I guess I have to introduce myself as the most optimistic person in this experience next to my godfather,
yeah,
whose optimism is indescribable. So for me, post-accident, he was severely disfigured. As he described, he lost his ability to eat and drink,
mm-hmm,
in the way that we're accustomed to doing. But physically, he looked like a different person because a portion of his nose was burned, his lips were burned,
mm-hmm,
his ear was burned, the color of his skin was discolored.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had a different person. But for me, because I've known him all my life since the age of 4, his expression, his sound all seemed the same to me. So in many ways, I wasn't looking at a different person.
Robert, I was going to ask you this. You were burned over 75% of your body. Was that right?
It depends on who you talk with.
Uh-huh.
Some people say 45, 35, 75, 60, you know, quite a bit of it.
Quite a bit of it, yeah.
Deformed.
Yeah. And then when you looked in the mirror, then were you shocked every time that you saw your face after the accident? Was it a shock? Did you get used to it?
I got used to it right away. It was not, I was in the hospital a year and a half.
Right.
And so as a result of, I think the first 8 months, I had not seen my face. I only saw some grass on my legs and arms because I was in a bed all that time.
Yeah.
And when I did get up, they got me up in the wheelchair, started wheeling me up. I saw the towel, the aluminum towel holder, and it showed a reflection of my face.
Mm.
That was the first time. So when I looked there and I said to myself, oh my God, that's what everybody is concerned about. I didn't know. You know, people would say, oh my God, I'm so sorry for you.
Mm.
Oh, you didn't deserve this. All these. You know, I'm thinking, well, I'm, as far as I'm concerned, I'm just fine.
Yeah.
You know, but they were seeing the outward appearance, and, I just could not, I was baffled behind it. So the first time that I saw myself, it was a relief. I finally realized this is what they're making the issue of.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But it was okay with me.
Yeah, and, he was okay with it, but what that discounts is, very close friends and relatives who were still very apprehensive about interacting with him. So he would be constantly reminded of how he looked and what effect he was having on other people.
Right, right. Thank you for that, because that's what I was wondering about was, it's like you can't, or one can't go around and not respond to people responding to you, right?
Right.
It's like people see you and have a response, and then there's either a need to explain, tell them that you're okay, or to explain what happened. And it's just not something that people see normally. So that curiosity is really piqued. And then the sympathy or pity that comes with it as well.
Yeah. And it's hard for people. Like my mother, one of his closest friends, had a really difficult time, working up to seeing him. In addition to my mom, Ebony, his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She struggled also. So you can imagine when someone close to you is severely disfigured. And if you're hypersensitive, meaning the best way I can describe it, like if you walk into a hospital and you have that visceral feel that somebody is hurt,
mm-hmm.
It's hard for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And so, Robert, you explained really well that, the impetus to get the transplant would be functionality. And then you also said something really beautiful, which was that you wanted to share an expression of love with your daughter, meaning you wanted to be able to kiss her. Is that correct?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So then you've made this decision. I'm taking you back in time to the time that you've made the decision that you will get the face transplant. And what I understand is that there was a potential donor who had light skin, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And that you rejected that. I think what happened was you didn't know how rare it was to find a black face, right? Or black skin, black face,
uh-huh.
Or facial skin, which goes back to our point about the lack of black donors again, that this is not as much of an issue for white people, right?
That's correct. I was surprised at the few donors, although I had read up a great deal on it,
mm-hmm.
But the apprehension, no matter how many people are in the world, the apprehension is so great,
yeah,
that when it really comes down to the bottom line, there aren't that many that's willing to do it.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't want light skin on your face and dark skin on your scalp and the rest of your body, rightfully so. That's not something you were willing to do, right?
That's correct. It wasn't that important to me to have another face. I'm satisfied with my face the function is what was most important to me. Mm-hmm. However, several physicians and my loved ones thought it might be better just to have a full face transplant where I could at least, my face could blend in a little bit better than it would
right.
if my face was, if you will, blurry light. There's a scale from about 1 to 18 mm-hmm. in terms of shades of African Americans. It was just developed for me, actually.
Really?
As a result of those shades, one being the lightest and 18 being the darkest, I had asked them, could they find someone between number 8 and 16,
mm-hmm.
One being the lightest.
Mm-hmm.
And so we weren't able to find anyone for a good year.
Right.
And so we decided to change it to 5 to 16.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we found a light-skinned person.
Interesting.
And, so eventually we, you know, by God's grace, they found a family that was willing.
Mm-hmm.
And another issue, Laura, is the even when a person signs up to be a donor, it's primarily for most common organs.
Right, like kidney.
But the face is not usually considered. So when you ask a family, would they consider allowing their loved one's face
mm-hmm.
to be donated, that means they can't have, at that time, they had what you call a proper burial
right.
or funeral service, open casket or whatever. You can't have that if you are donating your face.
Right.
So
right.
that was another issue. Many families have donated, but they weren't willing to donate their loved one's face.
Sure. And I think you say this in one of the documentaries I watched, but or one of the pieces I watched, but you know, there's the trauma of losing someone, right? Losing a loved one. And then the second piece of that is saying, you know, yes, it's great that parts of them will go give someone else life. But to say goodbye to their face is something else. And it feels like it takes the identity away. So, okay, so you made the decision. I understood that when you got the call from Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, you needed to be prepared and packed and ready to fly in 12 hours time. Like, there's no waiting once you get that call, right? You have to go because there's a face waiting for you.
It's still my decision to make to accept that donor or not.
Right.
However, my bags were packed. In 2016 is when they declared that I would be qualified.
Mm-hmm.
However, so I started packing my bags and everything else.
Yeah.
But logistic-wise, the hospital that I was in, on the West Coast, and the hospitals that they use on the East Coast did not know each other, didn't work with each other, and so on. So those kind of logistics. And Laura, I'm mentioning that because our government can concentrate on so many things at the same time. When it comes to issues like rare conditions or special surgeries, then they're usually not in the budget. They're not,
right,
you know.
Right.
So as a result of that, we had to go through, you know, quite a few changes. God has just opened so many wonderful doors to allow this to happen. I give so much credit to the corporation that Brigham Women's Hospital have given. They were really on top of helping, of being concerned. And of course, they had a record of being successful with every single one of the surgeries that they had. Not to mention, they've done more surgeries at that hospital than any hospital in the world.
Did you have to undergo psychological counseling before or during or after getting your face transplant?
I didn't have to, but they send you through a series of psychological evaluations regardless, just to even qualify.
Right.
Why do you want a face transplant? Are you feeling depressed? Do you think you can live without it? Are people laughing at you? Has your family disowned you? Can you work anymore? Do you feel comfortable approaching people? What's your sex life? All of these kind of questions were asked me, were three different
psychological
ologies
would
ask those kind of questions
right.
intensely just to qualify you.
Sure.
Because remember, they've never dealt with a black face.
Right. You were the first.
They weren't sure.
Yeah.
How would they detect if something was wrong right off the bat?
Mm-hmm.
So with a Caucasian, that face could be pink. And they'd know, oh, well, something's wrong.
Oh.
That face could be pale.
And yeah. They'd
be able to detect it. But with a black person, they can't detect that.
Mm-hmm.
And so these kind of nuances made it more intense because all of the psychiatrists, all the evaluators were also white.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, their understanding of their concept, you know, and in New England, it's about 3% black in the whole.
So once you got off that plane in Boston and got to the hospital, how, I know they prepped you for a while. There's a great deal of prep that goes into priming you to be able to receive the transplant, the face transplant. How long were the surgeries? Do you remember? How long were you in surgery afterward? I mean, for the transplant.
Yeah, they told me 16 hours.
16 hours.
Yes. And in preparation, basically, you know, I'm under anesthesia at that time, but essentially what they do is they take the donor's face. They go get that, and they take out the whole face.
Mm-hmm.
On me, they strip my face, or the skin that is left, they strip it. So basically, they're looking at a skeleton.
Right.
And then with the donor's face, they laser it into, say, 10 different layers.
Mm.
L-A-Y-E-R-S.
Yeah.
And then they put one layer on, and sew it together, nerve endings, blains, and so on, and then another layer, and then another layer, and so on. So that's basically how they actually place the donor's face onto me.
Wow. And is it true that the strongest post-op med you had was Tylenol? I read that. I couldn't believe that.
Laura.
Tell me.
God is able to do exceeding and abundant. I certainly couldn't ask for that. I couldn't expect that. But
yeah, that's amazing.
Go back a little further to the accident.
Mm-hmm.
I have yet to have pain from the fire.
Really?
The first night, I was really sore, and I felt some pain in certain places, like my knee and a couple other places. But I was sore because the accident, you know, the auto accident, you already messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody hit you.
Yeah.
So the fire really was a byproduct of the auto accident.
Right. And it was an inferno. It was everything was incinerated, right? It was
But God saw fit. I never had pain. Never had pain from that. As soon as I laid on the gurney in the ambulance, I never had pain. When I woke up, all the time I was in the hospital up until this very day, I have not even the amputations. So
amazing.
Tylenol was just they just insisted that I take Tylenol
right.
for the first 2 days from the transplant.
Wow. And so now, Everick, I want to ask you a question about Robert post-op, because I read that you said something about the juicy lips that he'd received.
Yes.
Can you tell me what that was?
Yeah, so there was, you know, all this talk about what he was going to look like and what to expect. So I was amazed and surprised that when he came out of surgery, that he wasn't bandaged, you know, over his complete face.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, he came out with a Band-Aid.
Oh.
And all I could see when he first came out was this beautiful complexion
mm-hmm.
and these beautiful lips, because that's all we've talked about, are lips to kiss his daughter.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm, you know, going through my checks, right? I need nice lips for kissing. I need a mouth for eating and drinking.
Yeah.
But it was amazing to me how he literally came out with a face, and it was just somewhat bruised.
Mm.
You would have imagined something, you know, unbearable. But
right.
It was one of the few times I've used the word miracle.
Mm.
If one can describe something as a miracle, that was my experience.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. And in every movie I've seen, the face is completely bandaged, and then it comes off afterward, where they've shown that kind of operation. So
no, that's TV.
It's TV. That's incredible.
Is, you come out with a real face. And what was really amazing is the face was already moving also. Like if he tried to talk or smile, you actually saw the face already moving hours after the surgery.
Amazing. So I just want to, because we're getting close on time, and I want to ask a couple more questions of both of you. But Robert, I'll direct this next one to you. Are you proud to be the first Black full-face transplant recipient?
No, I'm not proud of it. I'm extremely grateful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is no reason to look at what has been done historically other than to give credit for being allowed to be used in this way.
Mm-hmm. I love that humility in you. And I'm going to ask you also this. I'm going to ask both of you to answer this. Do you think that it's worth it, the transplant? And Everick, I'll start with you. Do you think that it's worth it?
Absolutely, for a lot of reasons. One is he is gaining more functionality by day.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part of this is doing something that science and doctors can learn from to help others.
Right, 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 exactly. How long ago was the surgery?
2019 in July.
2019. Okay. So yeah, that's really recent. As far as surgeries go, I absolutely think that. So Robert, do you believe it was worth it?
Yes, I certainly do. It was worth it, as Ricky mentioned, for several reasons. I'll put it this way. Hopefully it gives an incentive to others, the scientific community, research community, the individuals themselves, to have hope that the technology, the ability and resources are available. It's worth it, the little sacrifice that was done on my behalf. However, I believe it was worth it because it demonstrates what our Heavenly Father can do in showing me so many dimensions and gave me a greater appreciation for our disabled diaspora, who hopefully we can bring more attention to the need and the availability of help. One eye can actually save 8 other people's eyes.
Right, because of all the parts of the eyes that can be used.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so
and
true.
For me, I have more joy before the accident. My life is so much more increased in peace and contentment since the accident than ever before. I have seen, I'll just summarize it this way. If you've ever seen the beautiful fish on the surface that we see every day in movies and other places, and they're just on the surface what man has been able to see. Unless you've gone into a submarine and seen animals, plant life, and fish that only live at the bottom of the ocean, they are equally as beautiful.
Yeah.
If not more.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like going into the valley and seeing lilies in the valley.
Mm. Okay.
And this is what I'm experiencing. So is it worth it? I don't suggest that everybody go through it.
Right.
But if God sees fit to send you, as he did send Daniel in the lion's den, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, it is worth it.
It's worth it.
They came out more joyful than ever. And I can attest to that because that's the way I feel.
Mm. So two more questions. Did you meet the donor's family? Have they met you?
No. I do hope to meet them one day. We would rather pretty much get to where I'm fully recovered or at least to the point where I'm satisfied with my health and strength.
Yeah.
That I could introduce myself and receive them.
Yeah.
And hopefully they're willing to receive me.
Yeah. I would love to talk to you again after that happens because that's pretty amazing. And then
yes.
I did just want to mention the gentleman that pulled you out of that fire that saved your life on the freeway. You and he are friends, is that correct?
Oh, yes, yes.
That's so his great. Name was
Richard, he not only did that, but when he helped me out of the fire, he helped to bring me to a safe area. He followed the ambulance. He followed the ambulance to the hospital. He's been at the hospital many, many times. Of course, I wasn't even aware of it because I was in a coma.
Mm-hmm.
But all my family and everyone knows him by first name.
Yeah. Wow.
He's come to my church a couple of times. He and his family. They came. He brought his kids. Yeah. So, yeah, we're not just friends.
Your family. Yeah.
Yes.
And, Everick, you must be so grateful to him, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And I've met him several times. He's amazing.
Yeah. Wow. That's so cool. The last thing I wanted to ask you about, I wanted to make sure we mention, is it Donor's Dream?
Yes. Yes.
Tell me about Donor's Dream.
So Donor's Dream is the baby or grand idea of my godfather, which is to bring awareness around donorship, as we call it. So getting people, particularly brown and black people, to become donors. It is also to raise awareness for burn victims and amputee. At this juncture, we have started the not-for-profit organization. But in the meantime, I've tried to keep the priority on raising funds for my godfather, who is unable to work, until we can really focus on Donor's Dream. So at this point, we drive people to robertchelsea.org, and we ask that, you know, if you're willing to give a donation, that you make that donation to Robert. And there's also a way to get to that website through GoFundMe.
Excellent. Okay, that link will be in the show notes, so people can just click on that. If you're listening, just click on that, and then you can see how to donate. It's easy peasy. Are there more surgeries to be had, or do you think you're done, Robert?
There is another surgery. Because of the way my face has adhered or has not fully adhered, there has to be some adjustments. My lower lip, even with speech therapy and so on, it needs some surgical adjustments. My eyes, I can't see that well because sinking down.
Yeah.
Because my face has not fully adhered to my skull. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And as a result of that, there's some tightening up, you know, and stretching out.
Okay.
That may be done.
Okay, well, good. So then people can donate to your fund to help toward those surgeries and your everyday care, because I know that's a lot as well.
That's the greatest expense that we didn't really, we knew about what it might cost, but as a result of COVID, many things were delayed. Anyway, as a result of that, instead of saying 6 months in Boston, we only stayed 3 months because of cost and logistics and so on.
Sure.
So, you know, yes. But it's all in all, Laura, this experience, I hope, really opens doors for those that have felt somewhat hopeless.
Yeah.
Because God has a way, whether it's through face transplant, through replacing your limb, replacing your eye, and so on. God will have a way that is to open that door for an individual. And we just want to make sure that our mouthpiece does its best to inform individuals of that fact.
Yeah. Well, and the whole purpose of this podcast is to help people feel connected and to know that they're not alone. So I think your story is perfect because it does just that. And it does open doors for people who may not, where there might not have been a door before. You did, you know, as the oldest face full transplant recipient and the first African-American full face transplant recipient. You know, they say the first one through the wall gets a little bloody, but then the others can come through more easily. And you've done that. So thank you so much. And I just for being brave enough. And this was your first podcast. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
How was it? How did you like it?
Well, I like the way you and Scott and Gogo treated me.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, the rest was, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure.
I appreciate you asking me to come on your show. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you responding to my message on LinkedIn, and then really, Everick, appreciate you for coming in and making sure that it happened. And I love your family. I love the way you guys are, you know, as Godfather and Godson, how you look out for each other. And I, you know, I just appreciate you and your story. So thank you.
Yeah, you guys are both great. Thank you for taking the time to spend with us and share this story.
Well, it's our pleasure, and thank you for helping us share it.
Yeah, yeah. You guys worked hard for this thing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.